Hey, welcome back to another episode of Salty Saints Podcast. I am Zach.
I am Randy.
What's going on?
Not too much.
We didn't coordinate our outfits today, by the way. We're synced up now.
My mom dressed me, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, mine did not. We are talking about some fun stuff today.
Yeah, fun.
That's a word, right?
That's a word. That's not what we're doing today, though.
I feel like we just keep digging ourselves down this deeper and deeper controversial rabbit hole as far as sermons and podcast topics go, and it's just getting interesting.
Yeah, that's a word for it.
Well, that's where the world's going, you know? We gotta discuss the big stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So today we decided to kind of take a step back to the 30,000 foot level and take a look at discussions as discussions and kind of what's happening in the world today.
Yeah. And so the funny thing is, I think it probably helps to say we're talking about love.
Yeah, love, and specifically love and acceptance. Where does one stop, the other start?
Yeah.
How do we define those things?
Right. Because they do commingle a little bit, right?
They do. I think they should.
Yeah. But there's some tendencies that I see becoming more and more common that do not fit the biblical model of love.
Well, and a lot of it has to do with the way you define certain words. So when I say I accept you, does that mean I agree with you?
Right.
Or does that mean you are important to me? Because those are two different things.
Right. For instance, like the last podcast, well, I guess it would be a couple times ago for you guys listening, but Randy and I talked about salvation, talked about once saved, always saved, can I lose my salvation kind of thing. And there are points in that where Randy and I disagree. Now, we don't stop loving one another in that.
Right.
Don't stop honoring one another in that.
We don't stop accepting one another, even though we have a different point of view.
Exactly. And so I can look at it and be like, well, I think you're wrong, and I don't think that makes any sense at all. But, hey, we're good.
Right. I have a friend that he would say, I would love to agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
And so we seem to be going down this rabbit hole in our world today, or especially in Western civilization, where if you disagree with me, or if you don't see eye to eye with me, then you don't care about me, you don't love me, you are not my friend, you are my enemy. And biblically, that just does not add up.
Right.
And so that's what we really need to hash out today.
Yeah. So it's kind of looking at love as love, but we're not really going to dig deep in a definition. We're going to look at the practical outworkings of that as it relates to dialogue. It gets back to the very nature of apologetics.
Yeah.
Apologetics is basically a dialogue, but it's a dialogue where two people can disagree with each other.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, debate was viewed as a gentlemanly thing to do at one point in time.
That's right. And you could disagree with someone and still be very close friends.
Right. That's why it's called formal debate.
Yeah.
It's a respectable, kind, friendly way of saying, you're wrong, and here's why.
Right. So some 20 years ago, maybe not quite that long, there was a news show on, I think it was on the Fox News channel, Hannity and Combs. Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear that or see it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my dad was a news junkie, so I was constantly exposed to all of that business.
And the unique thing about this is Combs was an avid liberal and Hannity an avid conservative. And they would look, they're on the same broadcast, and they look at the same thing, but they look at it from two very different points of view. And then they explain their point of view. My understanding is that there was a very deep friendship between them, and they respected each other, truly respected each other. And Combs passed away. He died of cancer, I believe. But there is no show like that on today.
There is.
Oh, there is?
Not on mainstream media, but that's the problem with mainstream media.
Okay. What is it?
Crystal and Sagar are their names. One a liberal, one a conservative. And they are friends. They're close friends. And they just sit down and basically both give their view on things. And honestly, it kind of just makes everyone a little more moderate, I think, is what ends up happening from it. They all kind of chill out a little bit and stop hating each other.
I think that's what happened with Hannity and Combs, both of them. Combs at the end of a broadcast would be a little bit more conservative, and Hannity would be a little bit more liberal. So
yeah,
and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that,
right? And honestly, like I feel like maybe we may be veering a little bit from what we're trying to say. This is not a political thing. We're not talking politics.
No.
It's more about the manner in which we talk to each other.
Right. Again, it's that 30,000 foot level. What is the nature of dialogue and debate?
Exactly. Exactly. Which I mean, honestly, ties into the idea of love, right?
Yeah.
Or at least the biblical concept of love.
Kind of the inverse of that, the opposite of that is what we hear talked about fairly frequently, the cancel culture.
Yeah.
How would you define the cancel culture?
It's the idea, it's kind of there's room for some nuance here, right? Like
I'm sure there is.
I don't know that there's a one definitive way of looking at this. It's generally when a group of people gets outraged enough that they sway, I don't know, the majority of people to disown an organization, a person, to kind of blacklist it, to write it off. It happened with Alex Jones.
Who's he?
He was from, InfoWars. And don't get me wrong, here's the deal. Alex Jones says a lot of crazy stuff. But here in America, you have the right to say crazy stuff. And then everybody else goes, oh, well, that's crazy. I'm not going to listen to that. And that's what happens, right? So they canceled him. But it's not just people. He would probably be considered by most to be incredibly conservative. I don't think he actually is. I think he's actually pretty, socially liberal. I think he's probably more kind of moderate in the middle on things. But it's happening to people on the left as well. I mean, what was the – Jesse Smollett, was that his name? Said he was beat by the two men wearing MAGA hats. Do you remember this?
Don't remember that.
Okay, no. Well, it ended up that nothing he said was true.
Yeah, now I know what you're talking about.
And he ruined him.
A TV star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of ruined him.
Yeah.
And so, he kind of got canceled for trying to cancel people, you know?
Right.
So it kind of jumps back and forth. Like nobody's really safe from this thing. This thing is bigger than a political party.
Well, one of the recent ones that stands out to me is Winston Marshall with the band Mumford and Sons. He's the banjo player.
Yep.
And apparently he tweeted, he has a longstanding tradition of tweeting political views. And frankly, he is relatively liberal.
Sure.
But one of his recent tweets was about the founder or one of the main spokespeople of Antifa. Mm-hmm. Antifa is short for anti-fascist, and he made the comment that the way he is speaking out is a very fascist way of speaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was incredible backlash to that. And he ended up leaving the band Mumford & Sons.
Mm-hmm.
So that he wouldn't damage the band, because it was becoming more about him and his political views than it was about the music.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of forced him to submit an apology then, to which he then turned back around.
He did, and then he apologized for his apology and said, "What? I really meant what I originally wrote."
Right. And so
I'm not sure why I should apologize.
It really forces this whole cancel culture thing kind of just forces everybody into lying and just kind of going along with what you think you're supposed to say in order to save face.
It decreases dialogue ultimately.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
And you just brought up something that I think is one of the crucial points here. It's about saving face. It's about honor and shame.
Right.
Not about right and wrong.
Right. And personally, I think that – sorry. I mean, cancel culture is kind of a big piece of this, but it's not exactly like the heart of it either.
No.
It's an effect of the problem.
It's a symptom.
Yeah. Yeah, a symptom.
Yeah.
But – no, sorry. I just lost my train of thought. Another big issue with the whole cancel culture issue with just kind of saying what it is you think you're supposed to say is that you can never really generate any new ideas, right? Because like you're living under the fear of going along with what everybody else thinks is right. So how are you ever going to grow now?
Right.
Okay, how can we ever introduce any new ideas if that idea that I need to go touch on to, like, build upon, if that – like, for instance, one of the things I'm thinking is, like, ivermectin, talking about ivermectin. Since Trump said ivermectin was good, everybody determined – well, at least the media determined, oh, it's bad. We have to destroy this thing. This cannot be okay. Anybody that says ivermectin is good is wrong. Well, then an evolutionary biologist comes out. Eric Weinstein comes out. Is it Eric? It's one of the Weinstein brothers. I'm not sure. There's two. One's a physicist. One's an evolutionary biologist. Okay. But he comes out and he says, hey, this stuff actually works really great on a lot of different diseases. Maybe we should look into this. Maybe there are some benefits here. Let's check this out. And so YouTube pulls everything he says, gets rid of all of it, destroys his YouTube account. The guy loses – I mean, that's how he makes his money, right? And so the problem – Brett Weinstein. And so the problem is, well, wait. Like, how are we ever going to generate any new ideas? Like, how are we going to learn if ivermectin actually is good for anything? He didn't say it was. He said, hey, let's just look into this. But because he said that,
right,
he's now a Trump supporter, which he's not.
Right.
And now this is an awful thing. And it's like, well – we can't just shoot that down.
Right.
At the same time, that's one half of it. Then the other effect of cancel culture is you've got people jumping on the bandwagon because they're just scared and they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to be associated with the people that are hated, right? So they jump on and add to the mob that's trying to push for, oh, well, this is so bad. You know what I mean? So it really just – I mean, it's crazy how fast it works.
You mentioned something a couple of minutes ago about honor and shame, how the cancel culture, it's really not about right and wrong. It's about what's acceptable. It's about what agrees, what causes harmony with my personal group and the effort to see harmony across the board. I really think that gets at something that I believe is taking place today. I think North American society is gradually in a shift from a guilt-innocence value system, a value system which says there are absolutes, there is an objective right and an objective wrong, and the wrong is bad and the right is good. Mm-hmm. We are shifting to an honor shame where I need to feel what the group thinks, and whatever the group thinks, well, that's okay with me. So you actually do have people saying there is no such thing as objective truth. Instead, there is, to put it differently, there is right-ish and wrong-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. I want you to kind of hash these two things out a little more. But I do want to add that I think that this cancel culture, that this honor-shame system is catching pushback, a lot of it.
I think you're right.
But it's from two different groups of people. It's from the first group that you named. It's from the how did you phrase it? What we've classically been like, that there isn't.
Classically, we've said there is an objective truth. It's guilt and innocence.
Guilt, innocence, yeah. Guilt, innocence, society. But then power.
Power and fear.
Power and fear, yeah. And which is more
three value systems, yeah.
Right? And so those other two value systems are sort of pushing back on the honor shame value system right now. It's a weird blending of them, because what I see is you've got these kind of like classical right wrong, this is right, this is wrong, and we all have agreed on this for this many years, this is what it is, right? And a lot of them are either Christians or have based their value system off of Christianity unknowingly, because we've been a Christian nation forever, you know what I mean?
Correct.
On the flip side of that, though, I think the other pushback is coming from this mentality of, well, I don't really care what you believe. I believe what I believe, and you believe what you believe. Just don't mess with me. Don't mess with my family. Don't drag me into this. Everybody be cool. Everybody like each other. You can all be right. And that's more this New Age mentality.
Yeah.
And I see that New Age mentality, a lot of elements of that fall into that power, fear mentality.
Interesting.
Because that power, fear mentality, as you were you'd written out yesterday, you were showing me that paper. It's this idea of like trying to overcome the supernatural, overcome like
that's one element of it, or at least overcome the forces that are determining your life, whether you think those are demons or spirits, or whether you think that's Big Brother.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh well. Okay. So that's interesting, because then that's happening on the like on the hard right as well.
I think so.
So you're seeing this like kind of QAnon move against big government on the right, and then on the left you're seeing this more and more of a push of New Ageism, in which it's I'm going to manifest my own destiny. I'm going to speak my truth into existence.
Right,
and so it's magic. It's using this magical element to overcome reality, because reality is all subjective. It's all just this – it's just this – yeah, it's strange,
So on one side you have people saying the cancel culture is wrong because there is an objective truth. I'm right and you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, you have people saying there is no such thing as right and wrong, but you can't tell me what it is that I need to believe. I'm me, you're you, and
right.
You can't cancel me, and I can't cancel you.
Right. And on the one side, you see them trying to overcome big government, and on the other side, you see them trying to form their own reality.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, in a similar way, in the middle, you have a perceived reality there, which is kind of a blend of the other two.
Right, right,
right. It's sort of this like, well, we are all in agreement on these things, but also on these other things, you all just believe whatever you want. So it's kind of this jumble of the other two. But then it's going, but if you don't agree with us, then you're done.
And there is a third group that I attempt to represent anyway, that would say there is an objective reality. And that objective reality creates categories of right and wrong. And it's not that what I believe is right, it's that I believe that there is an objective correctness out there. And I better figure out what that is and bring myself into alignment with that, because that is right.
So, sorry, man, I hope we're not making any of this too confusing. I know this is a lot. This is drinking from a fire
hydrant. Fire hydrant, yeah.
But so that group you said it's a third group.
Yeah.
I would argue it's a fourth.
Okay.
Because I don't even know if that's the right way of putting it. I guess the way I look at it is all three of those groups have valid reasons for believing the way they believe. right? It's more of a culture thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say valid. I would say logical reasons.
Sure.
They may be wrong.
Right. But like, I understand why they believe what they believe.
Yeah.
And if their culture,
and it makes sense.
Right, and if their culture operates that way, then they to some degree have to operate that way to survive their culture.
Okay. Tracking with you.
But you can bring the gospel into any of those worldviews, and then it fulfills those worldviews. It brings, I guess it brings everybody into that there is a definitive right, there is a definitive wrong.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say it fulfills. I would say it challenges.
It challenges. But I think it even challenges where a lot of people are today with there is a definitive right, there is a definitive wrong.
I think you're absolutely right.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say is like, a lot of these people that would say, well, I'm a Christian. Honestly, look, guys, I'll be straight up with you. I've voted Republican most of my life, but I don't agree with everything that happens in the Republican Party. And I think it's a very broken party in many ways because governments are broken things.
Right.
That's what it boils down to. But I think there's a lot of people in this country that think, well, my side's got all the answers and it doesn't matter if you're left, if you're right, whatever. This is right. This is wrong. But my challenge to you is if it doesn't align with what the Bible says, you're wrong too. And
exactly.
So the Bible comes along with its own stake and says, no, I'm right. Get on my side.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bible ultimately is saying God holds truth.
Right.
That Jesus himself says, I am truth.
Yeah.
So
the
align
way,
with
the
me.
Truth, and the life.
Right. So align with me.
Yeah. You taught on that, wasn't it you?
Probably.
Joshua,
I know I've said that in the past.
The commander of the Lord's army, right?
Yeah, that may have been part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to align with him. He doesn't come to fight with you.
That's right.
He comes and you're going to get on his side now.
That's right. That's the choice you have. You can get on his side or you can keep trying to do your own thing.
Doesn't work out so hot that way.
Nope.
So you want to hash out those three camps a little bit?
Okay. So, yeah, the traditional one, the Western world, kind of is based on guilt and innocence. There's an objective right and wrong. There is good and there is evil. We're called to do good things. When we do evil things, there's punishment for it. We believe that punishment can be divine and it can be earthly. That's why laws exist, which is really interesting. Set up with that and not necessarily opposing, but a different value system of honor and shame, where the most important thing is the harmony of the group. Now, I never understood this until some 15 years ago. I was in China visiting a friend, and that friend had a motorcycle. And he said, one night I was driving through a village in China, and I was stopped by a policeman. And he said, you can't ride your motorcycle here. I said, why not? He said, because it's noisy. There are people who are sleeping. So you can't ride it here. My friend said, well, what law says? And the policeman said, well, I just told you that you can't ride it here. That's the only law that there is right now. He had to get off his motorcycle, hire a truck to tow his motorcycle to the edge of town, where he could get back on it and drive away. But he reflected on that afterward, and he said, here's what I took away from that. In the United States, a policeman keeps the law. There is an objective law out there. There is right and wrong out there. So the policeman says, okay, code 14B/13 says, and he can quote it or he can read it or whatever, it's a law that people must obey. His role is to make you submit to that reality, which is objective.
That he is also bound by.
That he is also bound by. In China, it's the harmony of the group that's key. So a policeman in China does not keep the law. He makes the law. So you're driving your motorcycle that's loud through town in the middle of the night. He has every right to stop you and say, I am just making a new law. He'd never say it this way. He would just say, you're waking people up. You can't do that. You have to hire a truck with a better muffler on it to tow you to the edge of town. Now, that's honor and shame. The group is the key there. You mentioned at the start that you thought Western society was experiencing this. Cancel culture has existed for decades, for centuries, in Eastern cultures. Some of their sayings, one of the sayings that I love, it's the nail whose head stands up that's beaten down by the hammer. Mm-hmm. So if you have an original idea, keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
It's much more important to have harmony in the group than it is to have an original idea. So it's a different way of looking at things. Then the third way of looking at things, power fear. This group would look at what's going on in our culture, and it would look for things that are influencing other things. So in tribal Africa, that might be looking for spirits who are determining what's happened. My son got sick. There's an evil spirit there. I'm afraid of that power, so I need to find a way to control that power. I do that through the use of magic or the use of a witch doctor or a shaman or through the use of herbs. In downtown New York City, it might not be demons that you fear, but you might fear a gang. A gang is controlling this area. Shoes on the lines and whatnot. You realize that this is under the Cribs or you know whatever gang there happens to be, and the way they exercise control is through indiscriminate violence. So you fear that power. And you look for ways to control that power. In that case, typically, it's finding out who you need to pay and paying whatever you need to pay so that they will not indiscriminately be violent against you and yours.
Hmm. Okay.
Cancel culture seems to me to be highly motivated by the society. What is it that other people here are thinking? What do they agree with? And if you don't agree with what everybody else is saying, even though it's not everybody, but if you don't agree with the mass, you're canceled. You're eliminated. We remove your Twitter account or we delete you from Facebook, or we silence you in any number of ways in which we can do it.
So, sorry, I'm going to ask questions here. But the honor, shame, and power, fear views seem really similar to me.
There's similarity.
Like, for instance, cancel culture kind of seems like both. That the people receiving, like the people that are people of fear being canceled, and therefore their means of controlling that is by complying and jumping on and becoming one of those that push cancel culture.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that another way of looking at it?
It could be, but I think it comes down to what is central in this particular culture. In a guilt, innocence, objective truth is central. In honor, shame, the harmony of the group is central. In power, fear, my own personal survival and well-being
is central. Okay, that's a better way of looking at it. Okay, gotcha.
So we come back to the basic question that we started with. Where does love and acceptance fit in all of this? With cancel culture, although it's a symptom, it's something that is very relevant here, it's not the dead center of what we really want to talk about. What do we mean when we say, I accept you? For cancel culture, for the majority of people that I believe surround us, would say that means that you agree with me. And I don't think that acceptance necessarily means agreement. I think I can disagree with you and still accept you.
Yeah, that's a tricky word to me, because I've kind of grown up in a culture that uses it differently, you know? And so, yeah, when I think of accepting something, I do kind of think of it as agreement. Saying like, yeah, I'm good with this.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of prefer the word love instead of acceptance.
Yeah, yeah.
I can love somebody. I can be there for you. I can help you however I can. I can look out for your best interest and disagree with you 100% on half of what you believe.
Now, that's kind of where we ended up here in the church. We had a sermon series on, well, not a sermon series. We had two sermons on LGBT community,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And transgender community. And where we ended up was we got to love them. We got to love them. At the same time, we have to tell the truth.
Right.
So objective truth, if we seek to submit to what Scripture says that that lifestyle is sinful, mm-hmm. that we should not be doing it, we can still love them. We can still be present mm-hmm. with them. We can still do the things that people normally do to people that they love.
Yeah.
Care for, offer guidance, even offer help, certainly be present with. And that does not mean that I accept your lifestyle, that I agree with
right.
your lifestyle.
I mean, so to speak to that, like within the church, right? All sorts of sin still exists within the church body, right? What I would hope the difference would be is that if I look at you and I'm like, hey, Randy, I know that you've been struggling with such and such.
Right.
Let's get this figured out. You know, you can't stay this way, man. Come on. I would hope that you would then turn and look at me and be like, I know. I need help.
Yeah.
Let's figure
yeah.
it out. That is not exactly how culture meets that, or our culture in the U.S.
No,
meets that these days.
No.
Because people love their sin. They love their sin.
And there is a... So we came back from Colombia in 1994. Mm-hmm. The big word back then, and it was huge, it was massive, was the word tolerance. Well, tolerance meant something to me when I left the United States in 1976 to go to Colombia, and it was not the way it was being used. The new definition of the word tolerance was basically saying you don't have the right to disagree.
Oh,
and
that's
boy,
not very
I
tolerant
struggled.
Of them.
Well, and that was the thing. They would openly talk about how the only thing that they would not tolerate was intolerant people. And primarily, that meant Christian, underline.
That's funny, man.
Yeah.
That's funny. I mean, yeah, that's like literally like the term anti-fascist.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hate fascism. So in order to combat fascism, we're going to behave like a bunch of fascists. It's the same thing. It's, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I feel like this has got to come full circle, right? The reason we believe that you can love somebody and disagree with them and want what's best for them, to correct them, to push them in the right direction, is because Jesus does it all the time.
With us.
Yeah. And I mean, not only in our lives today, right? Like, I mean, if I'm doing something wrong, Jesus is not going to let me feel okay about it.
Right.
Right? And so that's like how the Holy Spirit prompts us to do better, to stop sinning, right? Is because when you sin as a believer, you feel like dirt about it.
Yeah.
That's a thing. Beyond that, biblically, we see Jesus looking at people and loving people, like the woman that's about to be stoned to death,
they're
right?
About to be stoned to death for adultery.
They're going
to
kill her. And so he turns around and he says, okay, well, tell you what, which of you is without sin, you can throw the first stone.
And there were no first stones thrown.
Right, right. He challenges them all, right? And the thing is, they're not even wrong. They're upholding the law.
That's
they're
right.
upholding the law to stone her to death.
That's
but
right.
Jesus comes in and he shows mercy. And he points the finger back at everybody else and says, you're all guilty. You should all be killed. Okay? And they all set the stones down. They walk away. And then Jesus looks at the woman and he says, I don't judge you. Where you know, looks like everybody else went home. Looks like nobody's here to judge you. I'm not going to judge you either. But stop doing this.
Yeah.
And go home.
Yeah.
And
now that's interesting. Let's dig a little bit deeper in that story. The crowd brings the woman to Jesus because there is an objective truth. That objective truth is written in the Mosaic Law that says if you catch a woman and a man in adultery, then bring them, man and woman, and stone them.
I'm going to learn something
to
here.
Death.
I just feel it.
Yeah. Where's the guy? Where's the guy in the story?
Yep.
So Jesus probably correctly figures out, okay, so they sent the guy in to set her up. And then they storm the room in the middle of an act of sex and haul her out. But they sent the guy in, so they pay him whatever, and he walks away.
Even if it didn't happen that way, even if they did catch both of them, they aren't upholding the law because they sent him home. They didn't want to kill the guy.
But there's another objective reality, and that objective reality is God's mercy. God loves that woman. And Jesus looks at the woman, looks at the crowd, and says, okay, what you are trying to do here is not uphold the law. You're trying to put me in a tough spot.
Right. This isn't because you love God's law.
That's right.
This isn't because you love justice.
That's right. This is not because you are trying to be holy. You are showing me how unholy you are by doing this.
It's coming from a place of hate and self-preservation.
Right. And Jesus gets at the greater reality, the reality of God's mercy. Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. Now, he does come back to the right and wrong aspect of it. Yeah, stop doing this. That this is no way to live your life. Stop doing it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, this is off topic, but that's literally like one of my favorite things Jesus says in the entire Bible.
Oh, it's great.
Is when he looks
it?
At the woman and he says, oh, where'd they all go? Like, that's just so snarky. Like, looks like everybody went home.
Looks
that's
like
so
everybody's
strange.
Gone. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Where are they? And she answers, she says, well, they're gone. Says, oh, okay.
Oh, gotcha.
Me neither.
Interesting.
And that's the amazing thing. His qualification was, let he who is without sin throw the first stone. Who was the one person there without sin?
Jesus. He didn't pick up a rock.
And he said, I'm not going to. Because God has mercy.
God has mercy. Now, also, while we're here, we might as well just say this. That is not to say that God will not judge one day. But Jesus did not come to earth to judge the earth, but to show the mercy of God and the love of God.
Right.
There will come a day when there is judgment, and Jesus is trying to save us from that judgment.
It seems to me that when Jesus came to earth, people were just really, really focused on the judging.
Yeah.
And so he wanted them to see, first of all, he wanted the judges to see that they were going to be judged as well. And secondly, he wanted them to understand God has mercy.
Yeah.
Look at his mercy too.
Yeah. There's more to this.
Yeah. love and acceptance. So what does it look like to dialogue with somebody, to disagree with them, and yet accept them? What are ways in which you can concretely say to someone, I believe you're wrong, and I believe I'm right, and not come off sounding pompous or sounding like you're canceling them?
Right. Well, I generally find the best start to that answer is a glass of bourbon. But I... It's sort of a joke. I think the best way to talk to people about hard issues is to sit down and to do something together. Like there needs to be a camaraderie element. It helps a lot.
I think there needs to be a pre-existing relationship.
Well, sure. But, yeah. I mean, you're not going to just sit down with a stranger and have a meal. You know what I mean?
Oh, you can't on Facebook.
What?
You can take a post on Facebook and rip somebody
right.
a new one.
Right. What I'm saying, though, is like when I say like that element of camaraderie, like you're not just generally going to like go throw a football with some guy you don't know. You know what I mean?
True.
Like, so
yes.
You need that existing relationship.
Yeah.
I'm agreeing.
Right. Okay.
But like, yeah, like I think that there's a really important – I think it's really important – that we're kind in our delivery, that we're not like trying to trap people. I used to argue that way. When I was a kid, I was the worst. I just sit there with this little grin on my face and just say stuff. It was interrogation is what it was. I would ask questions because I was trapping you. You know what I mean? Like I would ask you unanswerable questions because I just wanted you to recognize how wrong you were.
Yeah.
And it was for me. It was for me to be right. It wasn't because I cared about what was actually right. And so we have to be careful. We have to actually care about that person.
Who was it? You put me onto a podcast. I listened to it. And he said he was a professor. And he taught logic. And he had one of his students who just, in the middle of an argument, she just stopped answering. And he said, well, you can't just stop answering. You've got to say something. She said, you're a logic bully. He said, what? She said, you are a logic bully. He said, I can't refute what you're saying, so I choose not to say anything.
Was it Frank Turek?
Could have been.
I don't remember.
But
I do remember it touched him.
It touched him. He said, okay, I need to stop being a logic bully. There's a way to present the truth and bully people with it. But there's another way to present the truth in which you're not bullying. You're saying, hey, this truth is as tough for me as it is for you.
Yeah. Something that I've really enjoyed. So I just started helping out with the middle school here.
Okay.
Middle schoolers are wrong about a lot of stuff because they're middle schoolers.
Sure.
But you don't want to, like, condemn them for being wrong because they're young and they're learning.
Sure.
And so, like, what it's helping me do is learn how to phrase my questions in a way where, it doesn't feel like I'm, like, trying to play this, like, oh, I'm dropping some sage-like wisdom on you and you need to retain
it. Right.
It's like I'm learning how to ask questions that I feel like might resonate with them and that they might try – it might help them understand what I'm trying to say. But, like, in a friendly – like, I'm trying to bring myself down to their level.
Something that you just said just kind of jogged with something in my mind. Isn't that what Jesus does so much? I mean, here's a guy who holds truth. He is truth. And when they ask him a question, he would answer with a question. He wouldn't say, well, this is the answer. He'd ask them a question and get them to answer the question. And then he'd say, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like what you were talking about, Dennis Kinlaw. About how he said, I like to go into a room and try and figure out, okay, that's where these people are.
I'm going to
try and raise the bar one step.
Right.
I just want to bring them one step further. I want to try.
But I start by figuring out where they are.
And that's, you got to be in a relationship to do that.
You do.
You got to care about people.
You do.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you can't do that when it's like you were saying on Facebook, where you just come in and you're like, oh, look at this stranger with the profile picture, and they have a Facebook profile too, and I'm on my side of the screen where they can't hurt me, and I'm going to destroy them verbally now, right. So they will know the truth. You know, like, right, that's right, not how right. you do it.
It usually doesn't work.
No, I don't think I've ever won a Facebook argument.
I've never participated.
Made
in one.
A
I just
whole lot of
close it off.
I deleted mine, man. You should delete yours too. This message go. Brought to you by Zach Kelly of New Hope Church.
Honor, shame, cancel culture, love and acceptance absolutes. Gosh, I feel like I don't think we've covered everything, Zach.
There's
what
no
else
way.
Is there?
There's no way of covering everything with this. We've got to start. I guess for any of you listening to this right now, that you're like, wow, this really resonates with me. This really makes sense. I need to go tell all the people that are disagreeing with this why they're wrong and explain to them about this. Like, that's not really the way to approach it either.
Right.
Like,
right.
It starts with making friends with people, despite your disagreements. Is that not the best way to show, to actually model it, to say, you don't agree with me on anything?
Best way to defeat an enemy is to make him a friend.
Yeah, I want to be your friend. I don't care if you hate me. Yeah. I want to be your friend.
Yeah.
I want to do something nice for somebody. Like, make that first step. Try to make a friend. I don't know. I was at the barber shop the other day, and I'm terrible at counting money. Okay, terrible. And there have been several times when I've screwed up the drawer, when like I'll have an extra $20 in my pocket or something off of tip money, and at the end of the day, I'll walk up to Saeed and I'll look at him, and Saeed is a Muslim man, and I'll walk up to him and I'll say, "Hey, man, like, I think I screwed up. Like, I think I've got more money in my pocket than I'm supposed to." And I said, just let me know if the drawer comes out right. If it doesn't, it's me. I just want you to know that. And the other day, I mean, I've done that for like 2 years now because I'm just used to screwing it up.
Right.
So I'm like, hey, man, make sure the drawer is good. If it's not, it's probably me, just so you know. And I'll walk out. I walked up to him the other day and I laid all my money out. I said, dude, I feel like I got too much money today. I said, I counted my tips at lunch. I said, I feel like I may. I said, I don't know how this adds up right. I said, I think I screwed up. He said, you are literally the only person that walks up to me in here and says, I think I have too much money in my pocket. And I was like, oh, well, just let me know if it works out all right, and I'll pay you back if it doesn't. You know, but I walked off, and I thought about that, and I was like, I hope that he can see that that's what Christians are like.
Yeah.
I don't want to be honorable. I just don't want to think – I don't want him to think
right.
I stole or something.
Right, right.
But at the same time, like, I hope that that shows him, like, what the Bible has taught me to be like. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care if he's like, oh, Zach's such a great guy. Like, I just want to try and do what's right by him.
Yeah.
And you know what? And he's taking great care of me, even though we disagree on religion probably as much as two people could.
Right, right.
And we're bros.
Yeah.
That's what it needs to look like.
That is what it needs to look like.
I'm glad I could serve as this example of holiness to all of you people listening.
That's great.
It's a joke.
And humility. And humility.
Absolute humility.
One of the things that we mentioned was one way to make sure that we're communicating love is to have that pre-existing relationship. Another way that I think we can communicate love and acceptance while disagreeing is to let people openly know, hey, we struggle. I'm not saying this because I think you need to become like me. You should not become like me. You should become, if anything, like the best version of me, but not like the real version of me, because the real version of me is screwed up in other ways.
Yeah. I just heard a guy the other day, he said it great. He said, I don't have the answers, but but I know a guy who does, so let's go follow him.
That's right.
Like, that's a pretty good way of putting it, man.
That is. That's right.
That's a pretty good way of putting it. Yeah. There's so much nuance here.
Yeah.
And that matters.
It really does, especially in this.
And we've got to get out of the way of ourselves. And we've got to be able to, like, oh, man. I feel like I've been really heavy on the, like, we got to stop drawing party lines in the sand thing lately. But, like, it's so true. Like, here's the deal, guys. At the end of the day, I definitely, like I said, I still lean more conservative than liberal. 100%. But there's some things that liberals do better than conservatives do.
Yeah.
And there's some things conservatives do better than liberals do. But you know who does better than all those things? Jesus. And if we would all just align with what he's telling us to do, we wouldn't have any of these issues.
It would solve a lot of the issues that
right.
we have.
And so we've got to stop looking at it as this, like, me versus them, them versus us yeah. versus them. Like, it's not that. It's that we are all incredibly screwed up. And there's only one way of navigating this properly, and it has nothing to do with politics. It's about Jesus. And so I feel like our knee-jerk action in this country is to make it about politics. And I guess what yeah. I'm saying is, yeah, politics matter, and we've got to vote on things. We've got to get that sorted out.
For
but
sure.
it doesn't start with, well, this is my group, and this right. is their right. No,
it and it doesn't with, end with that either.
No,
the politics
doesn't.
Is not the solution.
Right, right. I mean, it is. It's the way in which things get carried out in this country.
It
right?
is.
And so that's how we're supposed to introduce new laws, and that's how you know,
sure.
it's a functioning, important part of our life.
Right.
But it's not the end-all, be-all.
Right.
Jesus is.
Right. One of the realities, we talked about the three different value systems, the fear, power, honor, shame, guilt, innocence. Jesus addresses all of those on the cross. He died for our guilt, for our sin. He died for our shame. He took our shame away from us. And he died for our weakness.
Yeah.
And he took our weakness away from us.
And in turn, he attributed his power,
he gives
his honor.
His power, his honor.
And his
and
innocence.
His innocence.
That we can't do any of that on our own.
No, we can't.
He does
no,
that for
can't.
Us. No, and so the cool thing is when we start there, when we start at the foot of the cross, and we recognize that we can do nothing on our own, that should humble us to level the playing field. And if everyone would do that, I think conversations would get a whole lot easier in
yeah.
saying, like, I am no better than you. I don't have this any more figured out than you. I just want to do what's right. Jesus does have it figured out, and he tells me to love you, and I want to love you. Even if I think you're wrong, even if Jesus says you're wrong, I'm going to love you, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And love changes people's hearts. And honestly, coming back to it, talking about how Jesus didn't come to judge people, judgment doesn't change people's hearts. Love changes
right.
people's hearts.
Right.
And that's why Jesus came to show us the love of God,
right.
because
right.
that's what changes us.
When he comes the second time, he comes to judge.
Yeah. But at that point, everybody's had that opportunity to
that's
know
right.
the love of God, right?
That's right.
That's been extended already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that was fun. A little bit deep.
Yeah, a little bit deep. It may have been a circular argument at places.
I don't think it's an argument. I think it's pretty straightforward. I think there's going to be people that disagree with it. That's fine.
I'm positive.
We yeah. love you anyways.
Yeah. Even though you're wrong.
With that said, if you've got any questions for us at Salty Saints Podcast, please send them to saltysaints@becomehope.com. Questions@becomehope.com. Leave us a comment on YouTube, something. Drop us a like, a subscribe, a 5-star rating. We'll take 4-star ratings, too. Those are fine, but... it should be a 5. And you know, just however you can help us out. Thank you guys so much for listening to us here at Salty Saints Podcast, and we will check you later. Stay salty.
Everyone wants to change the world. Capital Ministries is doing just that, one heart at a time, by creating disciples of Jesus Christ among political leaders in the U.S. and foreign nations. For more than 25 years, founder Ralph Drollinger has written Bible studies specifically for public servants. Study along with us and learn what the Bible says about capitalism, communism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and other contemporary issues. Subscribe and follow us at lifeaudio.com or search Capital Ministries on your favorite podcast platform.